wish I knew, I wish I knew. What makes me me, what makes you you? It's just another point of view.
Our next segment, we're going to hear from David Rose, the author of a new and wonderful book called Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights. It's put out by New Press. And I'm Michael Ratner, and along with the other people here at Law & Disorder, two of us here, Dahlia and myself, have known David for a long time, worked with him both in England and here on Guantanamo. David is a prize-winning writer. His earliest article that I read on Guantanamo was a wonderful piece, came out in Vanity Fair, which really began to open the door to the kind of place Guantanamo was and to the kind of abuse that has been going on at Guantanamo. David is an investigative journalist as well. He's the winner of the David Watt Memorial Prize and the One World Award for Human Rights Journalism. His work appears in The Observer, Vanity Fair, and a number of other magazines. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Well, we're really pleased to see this book. I know you gave it, at least I read it in draft. What are some of the main points you want to make by this book?
Well, I suppose I'm really trying to make two points with this book. The first is that Guantanamo is morally outrageous. It's unethical. It breaches the American Constitution and every applicable part of international law. But the second point, which is perhaps less familiar, is that it's astonishingly ineffective. As a weapon in the so-called global war on terror, it has actually yielded little or no valuable intelligence, enormously valuable intelligence, as the former Gitmo commander, General Jeffrey Miller, used to say. And in fact, it's been hugely counterproductive. It has created a swathe of grievances across the whole of the Islamic world. And we've seen, tragically, in the last few months, hostages in Iraq and Saudi Arabia dressed up to look like Guantanamo hostages, because in a way that's what they are too, in orange jumpsuits and of course being beheaded. And this is very clearly in deliberate imitation of what the United States has done to the prisoners at Guantanamo.
Well, it raises for me always an issue that whenever I discuss Guantanamo, the first thing I hear, well, aren't we getting some intelligence from people? And even if we have a few innocent people there that shouldn't be tortured or abused, we're saving hundreds of lives, sort of a Benthamite utilitarian argument. Now, what would be your response to people who say, well, we are saving lives by this, and some things are necessary in this kind of war?
Well, my first point would be that is, of course, a very cynical point of view, that democracies should depend on due process, they should depend on legal standards, and international law and the law of war is there to protect our own soldiers just as much as anybody else. But the second point, the more important point, is it just isn't true. The first thing is that there has never been any of the high-ranking al-Qaeda terrorists which the United States has captured since 9/11 held at Guantanamo Bay. People such as Ramzi bin al-Shib, one of the co-planners of the 9/11 attacks, Mohammed Atta's former roommate in Germany, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who conceived the plan and probably ran it as bin Laden's chief of military operations, Abu Zubaydah, captured in Pakistan not long after 9/11. None of these people have ever been held at Guantanamo. They are held in a secret network of prisons run by the CIA in quite different places. Some say in Thailand, some say in Jordan, some say on floating jails on the Indian Ocean. But they've never been to Guantanamo. The people at Guantanamo are of a very different order. They are, at worst, people who supported the Taliban regime, who flocked to the Taliban banner when they were fighting a civil war against a different kind of Afghan regime, the Tajik Northern Alliance. But many of them are not even that. Many of them are people who were, in fact, sold to the Americans after the fall of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan and elsewhere for bounties of around $5,000 a head. Why are they at Guantanamo? They're there because of astonishingly inept screening procedures by the military intelligence officers whose job it was to work out whether somebody might have terrorist affiliations. And one of the more important interviews in the book, I think, is a long interview I conduct with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Cristino, a recently retired 20-year military intelligence colonel who served in the Pentagon's Joint Task Force Against Terrorism and the Joint Task Force Guantanamo. Now, what he says is that these people were very young. They were mostly reservists in their early 20s who had done a single training course at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, which had lasted just a few weeks. And they were largely reliant on extremely inept interpreters. There was a huge cultural and linguistic gulf between them and the people who they were questioning.
David, you've been inside Guantanamo. Take us there and tell us what it was like.
Well, when I went to Guantanamo about a year ago now, I felt that it was like a Potemkin village, that what I was being shown was a very sanitized, controlled, facade, like the villages that Count Grigory Potemkin erected for the benefit of Catherine the Great in the southern Ukraine in the 18th century, what I was being shown was something that was as nice as it could be made to be. Even then, I found it intensely disturbing. I found it, for example, extremely troubling that the rate of suicides was said to have declined, but only because they had reclassified suicide attempts. That when people tried to hang themselves, they were no longer being held to have tried to take their lives. They were indulging in what the doctors at Guantanamo termed manipulative self-injurious behavior, or SIB, an apparently rampant syndrome at Guantanamo amongst these detainees. They were said to be suffering from depression. Indeed, that the commonest drug being prescribed there was Prozac. And I asked the chief surgeon, a guy called Edmondson, well, why are these prisoners so depressed? Is it because of the circumstances they find themselves in? He said, no, I think maybe they were suffering from mental illness. And of course, the sheer physical environment is something quite close to most people's idea of hell. You have people who are held somewhere which for them is the end of the earth. Indeed, it is pretty close to the end of the earth, where it's intolerably hot all the time. There's no air conditioning in their cells. And for 5 days a week, they're in a box which is about the size of a queen-size bed, with a 2-foot metal cot along the wall and a thin mattress, a set of clothes which they will only get to change 2 or 3 times a week if they're lucky, a low faucet and a hole in the ground for a toilet, a copy of the Quran, and nothing else. And that is how they are spending years now. I mean, it's 3 years now since some of those people arrived almost in Guantanamo Bay. And of course, it's no wonder that they're intensely depressed, that they're actually going crazy. And on top of that, as I said, it was like a Potemkin facade. But what we now know is that violence is routine at Guantanamo Bay. The smooth running facade that you get taken around as a reporter. And of course, you're not allowed to talk to any detainees. They can talk to you if they see you, but you're not allowed to say anything back. It hides a regime which is essentially dependent on violence. The so-called IRF squads, the Instant Reaction Force, is a squad of 5 soldiers armed with pepper sprays and nightsticks who come into cells and basically beat detainees when they are held to have transgressed Guantanamo's arbitrary rules. One of the things I do in the book is I publish a set of the rules for the first time, and they're extremely draconian, and what they basically amount to is that if you don't do everything that US personnel tell you to do, at any point you can be subject to what is termed strict punishment. Well, the freed British detainees all told me about these IRF beatings. They even had coined a new verb to be IRFed, which meant basically being dragged out of your cell, your head slammed against the floor, pepper spray in your face, maybe your head shoved into the toilet and it being flushed, and then dragged out and having your eyebrows and your hair shaved and your beard forcibly in the sunshine and so forth. When I published those accounts in The Observer, the Pentagon denied them, said that they were completely without any foundation, there was no such violence going on. Although it was interesting that one of them, Tarek Dergul, had told me that every time the IRF was deployed, it was videoed. There was clearly a library of videotapes showing these deployments. Well, since those denials, 2 things have happened. One is that the Pentagon has confirmed to the Associated Press that there are these videos. Senator Patrick Leahy has tried to get hold of them and so far failed. The Pentagon has reassured the Associated Press that only 32 hours of these tapes depict the use of excessive force by the IRF. The second thing that has happened, of course, is that we've had the story of Specialist Sean Baker, the former Gitmo guard who was subjected to a training exercise. He was told to put on a jumpsuit, get underneath a bed, and then let the IRF practice extracting him from a cell. Well, what's happened to him is that he suffered irreversible brain damage. As 60 Minutes 2 revealed about 2 weeks ago, he's now getting 10 seizures a day as a direct result of the treatment he endured at the hands of the IRF.
Right, because the IRF didn't know that he was one of their own. They thought he was actually a Guantanamo detainee, right?
Yep. Yeah. And he apparently gave the code word to stop the exercise, and it appeared that the IRF that was practicing on him didn't know that there was such a thing as a code word or that it was an exercise, and they carried on beating his head against the metal floor and, as I say, caused an irreversible brain injury.
They only stopped because they saw his boots, is that right?
Eventually, he says, he screamed out, "I'm an American soldier! I'm an American soldier!" And that was what finally did it. Mm. But it was too late. He was medevaced out of Guantanamo. He was taken to Walter Reed Hospital in Washington. And he was unable to serve any longer in the military. To his great disappointment, he says that he still wishes to serve, but he is physically unable to do so.
For those of you just joining us, we have with us award-winning journalist and author David Rose here discussing his new book, Guantanamo, published by New Press. David, in the book, you discuss casual brutality of interrogations and of treatment at Guantanamo Bay. What you've been describing to us just now sounds anything but casual.
Yes, I don't think it is casual. I don't think there's anything very casual about Guantanamo. I think each part of the Gitmo system, which seems to be irrational if you take it on its own, actually it all fits into a pattern. Why have these military commissions? Only four people have been charged for trial under the military commissions. Well, the military commissions are there to legitimize the interrogations. The idea being that if you do get these confessions by using these coercive interrogation methods, well, eventually you're going to get enough to put someone on trial. So the interrogations sort of predicate the trials. The violence is there because, frankly, I think without this constant presence of violence lurking in the background, Guantanamo will become uncontrollable. One of my sources in the Pentagon told me how he had seen a series of memos, which was drawn up in 2002, at a point where they really felt they were losing control of Guantanamo because the detainees were going on repeated hunger strikes, they were refusing to cooperate, they were not going to interrogations, they were staying in the cells. I mean, it's quite interesting that the Pentagon has actually said that about a third of these Earth Squad deployments occur when detainees refuse to go to interrogations. The violence is there as a means of control. I suppose you could say that in a regular prison, control and restraint techniques are actually what keeps the whole thing running. But it's exactly the same in Guantanamo. The difference, of course, here is that these are people, by and large, who have never been charged with any offence, who've had no opportunity to confront whatever evidence exists against them, and are held indefinitely, simply not knowing how long it's going to be. There are other things happening, too. I was in Washington yesterday and I spoke to a very good source. And he said, look, you do realize there are now Iraqis in Guantanamo, in Camp Echo, this super maximum security.
Well, I didn't know that at all. There's Iraqis there?
Well, I don't have this confirmed, but he says, this is a reliable source. And he says that his understanding is that some of these ghost detainees, people who were not disclosed to the Red Cross, have gone from Iraq and are now in in Camp Delta, but in Camp Echo.
Yeah.
Now, that would make sense. Camp Echo was built at a cost of, I believe, $150 million by Keller, Brown and Root.
Camp Echo is the new prison?
It's the new prison.
The new real solid big prison.
That's right.
It's going to hold up to like 1,200 people or something? Or, I don't remember, 200? I don't remember.
I think it's about 200.
200,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, no one knows quite how big it is, but, it's outside the main Camp Delta. It's a totally secret facility. Everyone is in 24-hour solitary confinement.
First of all, I think the legal fight that's going on, I think, they want to reaffirm their right to treat people the way they are in a law-free zone. So I think that's crucial. That's why they're still fighting like this. So that's basic. And now I think there is a functional use. And then one question I have is whether the Red Cross is going to be in there getting into Camp Echo, which I don't know. I heard the Red Cross, I just got a note, the Red Cross went down again in June after there were all these objections. I don't know if you know this, from the human rights community. And their report finally apparently says, look, this is really amounts to torture.
That's what I understand.
But it hasn't come out yet.
And of course, one of the things I do in the book is I publish some of the minutes of previous meetings between the Red Cross and the Gitmo authorities. And what you see General Miller doing in October of last year is just simply lying. 12 days before I interviewed Miller, and he told me about how people were getting incentives, such as, for example, access to books in return for cooperating with their interrogators. The very same thing was put to him by the Red Cross, who were very concerned about mental deterioration by detainees. And they said, look, this is a flagrant breach of the Geneva Convention. Or its spirit, as they claim to be observing, that people should be coerced in this fashion, should have privileges given or removed in relation to whether or not they cooperate with interrogators. Now, Miller had been boasting about this to me, what a great system this was for getting intelligence. Confronted with this by the Red Cross, he just said, no, you're misinformed. I stick to the facts. Absolutely, this is not happening.
David, one of the reasons we do this program is that American media has really fallen down on the job. We don't hear enough about what our government is truly doing. I think that has created an atmosphere in America where people are resistant to hearing the truth about the U.S. government. What's the reaction been to your book?
Well, I've only been here a few days, and although it's fair to say that in doing various speaking meetings in Britain, I often was confronted by Americans. I don't know. I've so far spoken to audiences who have been pretty sympathetic. I've not had a hard time from those audiences. But I do see what you see, which is a complete lack of interest in the issue in most of the American media. I mean, the Washington Post is a very honorable exception, 60 Minutes, the New York Times, but beyond that, I mean, I don't think Americans really either know or care anything about what is happening in Guantanamo Bay.
Get David's book. It's called Guantanamo, The War on Human Rights. It's a great book, a lot of inside information from government people, interrogators, and others that really you can't get anywhere else.
It's a beautiful read. Get it and give it.
Thank you, David. You were great. You've done great work on this for a number of years. Really terrific.
Thank you.
Listeners can still donate to the station. Get a pen. You can pledge for premiums or become members of WBAI by calling 1-800-228-5599. That's one more time, 1-800-228-5599.